Welcome to the BYU Sports Cave, a podcast brought to you by Torn by Sports Network and hosted by the fine folks at Blog Talk Radio. It's time to slap in your earbuds and take a seat in the den.
Here's what's coming up on today's podcast, Around the Horn.
All right, folks, I am a sports fan, and this is what I believe. I believe that Taysom has had his Waterloo event. I also believe that there is an argument that BYU doesn't have the best 11 players on the field at the time. We'll go over the use case of Butch, Au, and in the Outside the Line segment, we're going to chat about, are we coddling our favorite team by not booing them when they perform bad? All right, let's discuss Taysom Hill's Waterloo event. Now, going into spring and fall camps, there was almost an honest-to-goodness position battle going on, at least this is what we heard, between fifth-year senior and the sophomore, Tanner Mangum. We heard it was contested, yet we heard stories that Taysom was pulling away and getting quite a bit of the plays heading into the fall camp with the number ones. Honestly, the question to me would have been more of a controversy if Tanner had won out the starting position based purely on quarterback skill and agility. Taysom has just seen more starting defenses. Taysom has had quite a bit of history with his offensive line, wide receiver core, and the running back phenom, Jamal Williams. Taysom was named an offensive captain because he was identified as a leader. A leader? What does that really mean? And what version of this leader did we really get? Did we get that once Heisman quality version 3 years ago that leaped that Texas player? Or are we getting his arthritic ridden body, because Taysom has given everything for King and Country? Through the first three games of the season, I would think, or I'd like to think, we got option A. But it's appearing we more likely got option B. Now, to be fair, the offensive line of the ball is much more of a coordinated unit than the defense has to be. No, I'm serious about this. Let's just think about this. The offensive line schemes must be called out correctly in order for all the skilled players to have the time to hit the hole, become available, and to make an athletic move. The wide receivers must run through the right holes in order to either take pressure off the running game by serving as a decoy and spread the field, or actually catch the ball and thus take the pressure off the running game as the potential to pass is actually an option. And the running backs just simply have to run like heck and just outspeed their defensive counterpart to the hole. That's a lot to get right on every single play, especially when you're installing a whole new offensive scheme. So the case is for Taysom Hill. He is likely the most capable or most able to help Ty Detmer install this new offensive scheme year one, right? In my mind, the question comes to, is Taysom physically and mentally capable to the effort? Taysom arguably is the most important part of this offensive system. He makes all the decisions. He decides in the final deal of this, he makes the final decision with the ball. He decides what progressions he's going to go with, Whom does he settle on that gives BYU the best chance to move the sticks? The problem is, Taysom's never been any good at throwing the deep ball in his career. More importantly, he just doesn't have any accuracy when he does that. So you can blame a wide receiver or two over a series or two. Now, Taysom has 455 completions and 791 attempts. That's roughly a 57.5 completion rate, percentage completion rate. 2013 was the first and only time Taysom was over 1,000 yards passing, with 2,938. Arguably, it's as low as completion percentage as well. And last year, Tanner had the approximate same completion rate of about 59 or 60% and had an average of 7.57 yards per attempt, but he achieved 3,377 yards. Now, why did I rattle off all those numbers? You'd be right to come to the same conclusions that I did, that it boils down to a difference of style. Taysom's more of a spread quarterback that runs, and Tanner is more of a pocket or a pro-style offense quarterback. The issue that I come to over and over and over is who gives us the best chance to win. And after Saturday's game versus UCLA, as horrific as it was, I say, let's stick with Taysom for this very important stat. Sacks. Tanner was sacked 30 times in 2015. 30 times. Taysom's been sacked 67 times thus far in his five-year career. With this offensive line's performance this year, I think it's wise for Kalani and Ty to keep Taysom in for at least the West Virginia game. The future is Tanner. And it would be a travesty if we sent him in to get injured versus West Virginia. It would be a huge mistake, given all the other things that BYU has to fix on this offensive team. However, I would say that after Taysom's injury last year, that was Taysom's Waterloo. And we should all change our expectations of what we expect Taysom to be for BYU to go forward to something that is drastically less. Now let's talk about the argument that BYU probably doesn't have the best 11 players on the field at one time. I think it's clear to everyone, at least I hope it is, that at least on the offensive side, we don't have the best 11 players out there for the system that we're trying to install. Ty Detmer is trying to install a pro-style system for a pro-style quarterback. That means there's a robust and a heavy offensive line that's needed. I mean, these boys need to be packing 300 to 350 pounds of meat to have the ability to push defenders around the pocket and keep it intact for at least 3 to 5 seconds. These were the hallmarks of BYU's offensive schemes, and BYU sent countless linemen to the NFL. These same offensive giants can also open amazing running lanes for our nimble running back Jamal to run through. Do we remember Luke Staley? This is going to take a couple of years to install. There are, however, some immediate things that Ty can do this year. That is junior college transfers. And that's next year. That's recruiting this year, but next year installed. So until that time, folks, Ty has Broncos people. Taysom isn't going to get any better against good P5 talent until BYU's offensive line gets better and the whole wide receiver core starts to catch balls. I would like to see more Corbin Kufusi in at tight end. We were given just one play sample of this against Arizona. This was another hallmark of BYU's legendary pro-style offensive scheme. And it was a pro set, tight end set. Until that time, we have to hope for the offensive line to get more snaps underneath their belt and build more cohesion. And possibly combined that we face less talent on the defensive side of the ball with BYU's upcoming opponents moving forward. I, like you, will be crossing my fingers. Butch Kaluz. It is becoming very apparent that I believe the spark plug for this 2016 Cougar team is the 5'9" Butch Kaluz. This sophomore, who hails from Anaheim, California, has been BYU's one-man wrecking crew. If you were just focused on BYU's record at 1-2, you might get lost on just what Butch has done for the Wise defensive campaign. 37 tackles. 22 of them are solo. 15, obviously, from a math, is assisted. He is increasing, folks. He had 9 tackles each versus Utah and Arizona. And then on Sunday, he had 19 against UCLA. And according to Brandon Judd from the Deseret News, remarking on Pau's performance, that this ties for the fourth most tackles in a single game in BYU history. And the most since Wani Unga had 19 versus Notre Dame in 2013. Pau's performance now for this year is the third best in the country and has 5.5 tackles for loss, a sack, and a forced fumble. This could not have happened unless Harvey Longhi transitioned to the defensive end this year to allow Butch to step into this starting role and to thrive for the Cougars. Pau cited that his biggest takeaway he has gotten from first-year Coach Sitake is, Coach Sitake says, we are going to play with love and respect, but make sure the opposing team knows that we're there. Rosen knew we were coming after him because he's a great quarterback. We have to give him respect and his offensive line. Respect is just part of the game and something we all should be doing. I think Pau's got it. And if that boy can stay healthy, we've got 2 more years of this guy, guys. I'm really excited. So, way to go. I can't wait to see what he's going to do against West Virginia.
The BYU Sports Cave is sponsored by
Yeah, they're the worst.
No worries, man. Everything will be alright.
Yeah, man.
Don't fret me, brother. Sticky bun comes soon. Yeah. Wicked coffee, Mr. Jim. Julia, turn the frown the other way around.
Hey, Dave, you're from Minnesota, right?
Yes, I. The land of 10,000 lakes. The Gopher State.
So in conclusion, things are pretty dismal.
You know what this room needs? A smile. Who wanna come with I?
Traveling along, there's a song that we're singing. Come on, get happy.
You guys are 3 minutes late.
Don't be no cloud on a sunny day.
Yeah, chill, Winston.
Sir?
Respect, boss man. We'll
make you happy. That's the power of German engineering.
I'm telling you what.
choose it. We blowing it up like we butane. No sleep on the team like a duvet. We fight to the top of the food chain. You know we on top like a duvet.
Next on my dad's podcast, Outside the Lines.
All right, guys. Regardless of our fan allegiance, whether we cheer for the team up north or the team down south, we all know the feeling. Our team's performing badly. Nothing's going right. What's worse is you get the perception that your team's giving up. The quarterback isn't running fast, doesn't have the burst of speed he used to have. The wide receivers aren't catching the ball whatsoever. So when you have gone third and out, three and out, for like the 15th bazillion time, you start to get that hankering to show your disgust with the team. Now, booing isn't only reserved for sporting events. We can go all the way back to the gladiators in ancient Roman times when the crowd jeered them. Booing actually started in the 19th century in Britain. Theatergoers in Europe are regularly booed on plays in parts that they don't like. And critics even boo bad films at the Cannes Film Festival. All I'm saying is there's a history of booing on the sports field that isn't even questioned at all. Think about it. Do you boo the opposing players and team when they come in on the field? Especially if it's a rival? Do you boo the opposing player who might have supposedly targeted your team's player? Do you boo referees who make horrendous calls or just a call that goes against your team? It happens, and it's all part of the game. However, I think when you boo your own team, it's an entirely different thing. Booing your own coaches and your own players on your home field tends to be a pretty big taboo. At least in college football it is. After all, you're supposed to be a supporter of the home team, right? You're here to support the team and not to be a judge. I don't know. That might be a naive statement, but I don't know if that's actually the best way to get through to your team. People, your players, get on social media. Those players and coaches aren't idiots, and they see what you're thinking. And fans tend to be hopelessly devoted to their team, but they're also fickle. And the occasional sports fan tends to stop going to sporting events when you lose. BYU has had that example happen to them ever since they went independent. And that's the difference between a 65,000-seat sellout or just a well-attended 53,000 partially filled stadium, right? I think the college game's a little bit different. And while most college experiences, the fans are treated more like supporters now. And I do think if you are treated as a consumer or a customer, then you as a customer should be able to express your disappointment at poor performance, like we would at any other medium of entertainment, but just after the performance is over. And that's in a traditional setting, like I said. Currently, BYU is not in a traditional setting. This is Satake's first year. This is Ty Detmer's first year. This is Tuiaki's first year. The defense is learning a new scheme. The offense is learning a new scheme. In fact, these players weren't recruited for this scheme. Last year, Robert and I cited that after Taysom's injury in the Nebraska game, he said Taysom was just learning what we wanted him to do in this offense. We saw at the University of Utah, as they tried to implement their carousel of offensive coordinators and ever-changing offensive scheme, there was a terrible inconsistency from the QBs. So trust me, I've had to change my thoughts on this several times over the two games versus Utah and UCLA. I was there. I was wasn't there at the game. I was there watching the game, and I was completely frustrated with the offensive side of the ball. With regards to the two-point conversion, Taysom completely set the wrong offensive line scheme, and this led to not having the right blocking scheme for the attempt. Taysom's been hesitating or holding onto the ball as if he was a freshman starting QB rather than the fifth-year senior that he is. While this might be chalked up to facing really good P5 defensive secondaries, it also has to deal with wide receivers adjusting to a new playbook, and they have been running incorrect routes. We have seen offensive confusion these last two games. I would also cite to YFan young and old that Satake and Detmer, again, do not have the right personnel in place to compete at a P5 level with this system. At Utah, Whittingham cited this over and over, that he needed speed, size at the wide receiver position, to continue to spread the field. The offensive line needed to change to get more physical and more disciplined. Satake and Detmer have instituted several defensive overhauls, to take the phrase. He has moved people around and placed them in different positions that will help them shine and also make an immediate impact on wins and losses. The defense is what's keeping us in games. Defense is what has kept the Utah game from being another 54-10 blowout, or kept us in the hunt with UCLA. Defense is easier to overhaul. The offense is a whole different ball of wax. So, we do need a honeymoon period. We need to be more patient, not less patient. And yes, I too have to change the way I think and give Ty Detmer the team this season to start putting the building blocks on the Satake era in place. I can save my booing for another year. And that's what I believe. Well, folks, that's a wrap. Today's band of the day that you've been hearing on the bumpers has been chosen by me, James the Mormon. You can find his link to his album on our website at tornbysports.com on today's show notes. If you like what you've heard and you want to know more about what I believe, you can always follow me on the Twitter machine at BYU Sports Cave, or you can email me hate mail, make a song recommendation, or provide just general feedback at BYUSportsCave@gmail.com. Join me next week on the BYU Sports Cave here on the Torn by Sports Network and Blog Talk Radio. You can also find our podcast on iTunes Podcasts and Stitcher Radio.
That was wonderful.
Bravo.
I loved that.
Oh, it was great.
Well, it was pretty good.
Well, it wasn't bad.
Well, there were parts of it that weren't very good,
though. It could have been a lot better.
I didn't really like it.
It was pretty terrible.
It was bad.
It was awful.
It was terrible.
Get him away.
Hey, boo.
Boo.